marketing, explosive growth, and revolutionary secrets that can catapult your business to new heights. You're now listening to the Underground Marketer Podcast with your host, Tudor Dumitrescu, the one podcast devoted to showing new businesses how to market themselves for high growth.
Welcome to the Underground Marketer. This is the place where we deliver the real truth about marketing and explore big ideas that can help new businesses thrive and grow into big ones. I'm your host, Tudor, and today it's my pleasure to welcome Noraliza Tung, the main author of the upcoming book, Nine Doors of Perception, Organizational Behavior Change, especially for leaders, managers, and directors, the ABCs of Influence in the Age of Alchemy. Welcome, Noraliza. It's my pleasure to have you here, and I think that it would be great if you start by telling myself and the rest of the listeners a bit about yourself and your story and how you got into this whole game of influence and persuasion.
Thank you so much, Tudor. It's a pleasure to be here today. So my story starts with my job working as tech support for a law firm. I was looking for a way to really expand my skill set and my knowledge, and I wanted to learn how to better work on a team and open up communication with people. And I found this class by Joost van der Leij. He had this class with nine students where he went over ABC, NLP, and the cybernetic Big Five theory and the neurogram. And that is the core of what this book, Nine Doors of Perception, is about. It's leveraging the Enneagram and the neurogram and cybernetic Big Five and using those ideas to better work with people.
That sounds awesome. So, I mean, what sort of change can somebody expect by going through this book and starting to implement some of these techniques that you just mentioned?
Yeah, that's a great question. So to the kind of change that you can get from this is, I'll start by telling about the changes that I went through. So I wanted to sign up for a seminar about the Enneagram and a seminar about leadership and about using the Enneagram to enhance communication and teamwork. Mm-hmm. And this seminar, it cost $2,000, and using the teachings from ABC, NLP, and the Neurogram, I was able to get my manager at work to reimburse me. And also in the process, while working on this seminar and increasing my skill set, I learned about behavior science and about the outcome was I got a 10% raise and
nice.
I got promoted. So this was really great for me.
Wow, that's awesome. And did this promotion involve getting some help in attending that seminar, or how was that related to it?
Well, yes, I was 100% reimbursed for the seminar.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, it really helped me.
Wow, that's awesome. So it sounds like this is really powerful. I mean, can you tell us a bit about the technology behind that will be revealed inside the book? So I know that you call it ABC NLP. Can you tell us a brief summary, what it is and how exactly it works? And then we can go a little bit more into how you've actually used it so far.
Yes. So to summarize, ABC NLP, it stands for antecedents, B is behavior, and C is consequences. And the NLP part is neuro-linguistic programming. The A, antecedents, it's everything that happens before the behavior and then therefore produces the consequences. Mm-hmm. And what you do is when taking into account the neurogram and the brain types, for example, type one perfectionist, we reveal the behavior and the consequences when working with them on a team. So for example, with a type one perfectionist, the most effective strategy is to make them think that they thought of an idea first. So if you have a type one on your team, it would be to our advantage to make them believe that they came up with an idea first. And so that would make a project run more smoothly.
Wow, that's really interesting. So this actually gets me curious. Do you think that influence works differently based on different personality types, and that it's therefore really important to sort of be able to understand the personality type of the person that we're dealing with so that we know how we can communicate more effectively with them?
Yes, I'm glad you asked that question. I'll give a brief summary of the Neurogram because there's 9 different personality types in that model. There's type 1, the perfectionist, also known as the reformer. Type 2, the helper. Type 3, the successful worker or the achiever. Type 4, the romantic or the individualist. Type 5, the analyst and the investigator. Type 6, the loyalist. Mm-hmm. Type 7, the hedonist / enthusiast. And type 8, the boss, challenger. And then last but not least, type 9, the mediator, also known as the peacemaker. And each of those 9 personality types has different aspects to their brain type that makes the behavior science change. Like, as I mentioned earlier with the type 1 perfectionist, making them think that they came up with an idea first. Like with type 2, the helper, the main idea behind their brain type is they crave love and attention. So as the antecedent, you wouldn't really give an antecedent in this situation. It's more of giving them love and attention as a reward. So that would be like the C, the consequence for if they did a positive behavior.
Wow, really, really fascinating. So, I mean, are these, because you mentioned the Enneagram has 9 different personality types, are these different personality types grounded, let's say, in different needs that people have, you know, like some primary needs that they have, which differ, and therefore they manifest different personalities? Or what else are these personalities grounded in?
Yes, and I wanted to clarify, some people who follow the Neurogram or the Enneagram would say that these are not actually personality types, but rather like Joost van der Ley, he calls them brain types. So this is grounded in behavior science and their brain chemistry. And then going back to some of their needs and some of their primary traits, like, for example, the type 6, the loyalist, their desire is to feel safe and to mitigate all the risks in their lives. So in their heads, they might run some disaster scenario of, oh, what could go wrong? Mm-hmm. Oh, my microphone might break during this podcast, or oh, the roof over my head is gonna crumble. So when you understand that you're working with a type 6 loyalist, it's helpful to give them a list of all the worst case scenario possible and to tell them to dispel their beliefs about those scenarios. So for example, if I'm working with a type 6 at work as a, like with my role at the law firm as a computer technician, if I get someone who is asking me a lot of questions about their computer or about what's going on with a project, it's helpful for me to go over with them everything, all the possibilities of what can go wrong, and then give them time to think about it. So not forcing them into making a big decision right away, give them all the information available so that they know what the risks are, and even giving them time to think about how they would react to said situations that would go wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if I follow you correctly, this really is about personalizing influence and the techniques that we're using to communicate based on the brain type of the person or the personality, however we're going to call it. And that's obviously going to make it really, really a lot more effective. My follow-up question here really is, obviously, when you're interacting with someone, you know, let's say that you're interacting with them for the first time, mm-hmm. how would you go about understanding what type they are and what type you're dealing with when you work with them or when you discuss with them? Are there any giveaways that people should watch out for to understand what personality type they're doing without obviously giving them a test?
Yes, that's a beautiful question, actually. So to identify each of the brain types, at the beginning of each chapter in the 9 Doors of Perception, there's a summary of how to identify each type. So for example, the type 3 successful worker, that's one of my favorites because visually they keep up with the latest fashion trends. They are very image conscious. And they're easily identifiable because they're going to be focused on the way they look. And they have a very driven attitude about their work. They, in a way, their work almost defines them, where they will be successful at whatever cost it takes. And then some other examples, like the type 6 loyalist, they will often come across as a doubter since they are more fearful of their environment and constantly thinking of those disaster scenarios. And they'll be doubtful and asking questions. So, for example, a type 6 loyalist might ask, oh, so what about this podcast? Where is it going to be presented? Like, what if my microphone doesn't work? What if they'll ask all the what if questions? And
Yeah, I mean, what really fascinates me about this is that, and what I really love about Nine Doors of Perception and why I think that it's truly revolutionary when it comes to influence, is that so far, most of the books and most of the literature on influence has been very general, in the sense that it didn't take into account the personality type that you're dealing with. You know, for example, if we take old influence books like Influenced by Robert Cialdini, for example, it doesn't go into detail in how different influence techniques have to be adapted to the person you're dealing with. And I think that Nine Doors of Perception does this beautifully. So that's the one part that I think that I love the most, and that's truly going to be a game changer. So, I mean, can you tell me a bit about how this can benefit people in different roles within a company? So how can it benefit employees? How can it benefit managers? How can it benefit C-level executives? If you can walk me through all three of them.
Yeah, so the great thing about this book is that it can be read from a bottom-up perspective or a top-down perspective. So what I mean by that is, let's say if I'm a manager at a company reading this from a top-down perspective, I would be able to think, oh, I'm reading about a type 2 helper, and Jane on my team looks like a type 2 because she is constantly wanting this love and attention from people. I may treat her differently according to the neurogram, and it'll help me with my interaction with her. To what I mean to say is that people will react differently to different things. And since these nine different brain types and with this neurogram and ABC and LP, it's grounded in research in Amsterdam from the Institute of Behavior Science. So we tie in the cybernetic Big Five theory. Well, to summarize with the big cybernetic Big Five theory, you can remember it with the acronym OCEAN. O stands for the openness to experience. C, conscientiousness. E is extroversion. A is agreeableness. And N for neuroticism. And using those five traits, you can pinpoint and identify with each of the nine brain types, because some of the brain types have, like, for example, a higher degree of extroversion or a more openness to experience. So taking those things into account is where you would get all that influence and open up those doors of communication for people. And then from the, like, from a bottom-up perspective, as I mentioned earlier, if I'm someone at a company who's below several levels and I'm reporting to different managers, it would be helpful to also think about those brain types and the cybernetic Big Five theory, especially if you're trying to please a manager. So, like, for example, if someone has a type 9 mediator boss or manager at work, one would be able to think, oh, the type 9, they crave harmony, they want peace. So you would be able to embody that mindset in your work.
That's awesome. So, I mean, to summarize this a little bit, you're basically saying that this can really help managers to make sure that their team is more productive and that there is less conflict at work, if I follow you correctly. And it can help employees from a bottom-up perspective navigate politics at the office better and also make sure that they get promoted more frequently and they get actually seen for the value that they provide. Would that be a fair summary, or am I missing something?
Yes, that is a fantastic summary. Thank you.
Awesome. So, I mean, the next thing I wanted to ask you here is, obviously we know that we have to tailor our influence to the personality type that we're dealing with. But one thing that makes me really curious is if your personality type actually affects how you deal with other personality types. And if, for example, you have an easier time dealing with some personality types and a harder time dealing with some specific different brain types.
Yes, so that is definitely a likely scenario. Obviously, not everyone is going to get along in a corporate environment or anytime you're working on a team with multiple people. Yeah, so just to elaborate a little bit on that, for example, I'm a type 8, the boss, also known as the challenger. So
nice.
Yoast would categorize me as what's called a problem maker. So it's ingrained in my brain type to say, for example, to my domestic partner, Ben, yeah, there's a mess over there. You need to clean that up. Or, yeah, here's a list of chores that needs to be done. Do those while I'm out. And
yeah.
Yeah. So, and then adding on to that, as a type 8, I have what's called access to a wing. A wing in this case is like the type that comes before or after your type. So, example, Yoast and I discovered that I'm a type 7 wing. So I'm a type 8 with a 7 wing. The 7 is the hedonist. The 7 wants to have fun, and their primary drive is to dispel the sadness in my life by escaping to something fun. So taking that information to account, if I'm dealing with like a type, like, for example, the successful worker, they may not want to be bossed around. They may want to have more autonomy and agency over their work and not have to listen to someone like me boss them around. Or another example is Ben. He's a type 7 hedonist, and he might want to be more focused on having a good time than listening to me boss him around. And then another aspect to take into consideration is the stress and relaxation points of each type. So for example, the type 2 helper, when they are under stress, they're more likely to display the traits of the type 8 boss. So their language pattern will change from, oh, let's get along, let's spread the love and attention to the team. And then that tune will change to, let's do what I want to do. So they take more charge of the situation when they're under stress, when they go to that type 8 stress wing.
Nice.
Yeah, and then when relaxed, they're going to display the characteristics of the type 4, the romantic. And the type 4s, they're characterized by their individuality. So they may want to contribute something to the world and be known for their contributions to society.
To me, it's really interesting how you mentioned some personal examples of this and how it actually affected you personally by learning about your own personality and then the wing personality as well. And to me, that's really fascinating because we have communication with the outside world, right? So with other people, with maybe employees, maybe with bosses, maybe with customers, maybe with investors. But then we also have communication with ourselves, right? So I was wondering if you can tell us a little bit about how 9 Doors of Perception can help us improve the communication that we have with ourselves, and going a bit more in the self-help direction here and how this can be useful there.
Yeah, that is a fantastic question. So as far as self-help goes, part of my class with Yoast van der Ley was the ABC NLP practitioner course. So this was more of an entry-level class, but he taught me about the NLP aspect of the brain types. So in terms of self-help, how that plays out is these visualization exercises. So for example, in 9 Doors of Perception, I talk about what's called the spinning feelings technique. And the point of that technique is to feel good no matter what's going on in your life. So for example, if I'm having a bad day at work, I would use the spinning feelings technique. What that is first you start by sitting or standing, grounding yourself, wave your arms away from your body and then towards your body. Get a feel for that energy, where your energy is flowing. Focus on whatever negative feeling is in your body. For example, if I have a stomach ache because I just got into a altercation at work, mm-hmm. I might think, okay, this negative feeling is in my stomach, and visualize that feeling moving out of your body. So with me, I would visualize that as coming up through my stomach, through my chest area, through my shoulders, and then out through my arms, and then through my fingertips, mm-hmm. and visualize that going, that energy going from the stomach to the chest, through the arms, through the fingertips, to the floor, through your feet, and then coming back in as a positive feeling, mm-hmm. Or a positive emotion. And it also helps to assign a feeling, a color. So if you're feeling sick, it might be, for example, like if I say it's the color red, you think of that red color flowing out of your body. Well, there's a positive, like maybe a green color, mm-hmm. swirling back into you, like through your head, through your shoulders, through your chest, back down through your stomach, through your legs, and then through the earth below you. Mm-hmm. So what that creates is like, it's like a donut that the energy, it's folding outside and then inside back into itself. Mm-hmm. Some other techniques that I found very useful in terms of self-improvement is the swish technique. One of them, especially with like self-image or negative self-talk. Like I said, to back up a bit, to summarize about negative self-talk, mm-hmm. There's several different techniques that you can use to dispel that negativity. So for example, if I look in the mirror and I say, oh, I look fat today, or my hair looks weird. Mm-hmm. I always suggest to use what's called the sexy voice technique. So think of like a sexy voice saying that back to you. So in a way, it's reframing the issue to mm-hmm. make it seem a little more ridiculous. And so in a way, you start to laugh at this negative self-talk. And if you don't have a sexy voice, then he suggests thinking of like Donald Duck or like some mm-hmm. cartoon character voice saying something like that to you.
yeah. It's this sounds really effective. So, I mean, how long do you generally have to do one of these techniques for to start seeing results in terms of changing how you feel about yourself or about a particular event or shifting the self-image that you're having at the moment? How fast, basically, does it work?
So it works instantly. I had a session with Yoast where we were focusing on reframing a negative experience. This negative experience that he made me reframe was I had lost a job quite a few years back, and mm-hmm. it was affecting me up until recently because I carried this insecurity with me for years. I was devastated when I lost this job because it was promising. I was getting raises. I was doing really good work, but there were things that were outside of my control, and Yoast helped me realize that. So the technique that we use for that, it's what's called the movie theater technique, where mm-hmm. you first think of yourself in like as the projectionist in a movie theater. Visualize yourself sitting in the audience watching this movie screen. And also, I'm just doing a brief summary, so pardon me for kind of going fast through this.
No, it's okay. It's perfect.
Yeah, so you picture yourself sitting in the audience watching this movie. First, you neutralize the experience by visualizing yourself in black and white. So, for example, I visualized myself in black and white, going in and out of this office and doing everything in black and white, visualizing getting yelled at by the boss in black and white to neutralize the experience. And then you mentally rewind this image in your head to a point before the incident. So for example, Yoast and I were able to pinpoint the date before I got fired, and mm-hmm. You visualize that date before the incident, and you mentally rewind to that starting point. And as you're mentally rewinding, you also visualize some music playing in the background, like circus music, like something that mm-hmm. Would be upbeat and help you reframe the issue.
The opposite of, what you're feeling. I see.
Yes. And you do that in your head three times. When Yoast was walking me through it, it's played out. It's a more longer session. Our session was about an hour. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm I know I'm doing the encapsulation right now, but in the in a real live session, this would take about an hour where we walk through the issue. We don't dwell on exactly like the who, what, when, where, why of why something went bad, but it's mostly about reframing the issue, thinking of it as, oh, I can overcome this the next time this happens. And then finally, at the end of that session, after you do that movie theater technique three times, you visualize in the future, like, okay, a year from now, let's say I lose my job again. And then you visualize that in a similar way where you neutralize the memory and you think about that circus music playing in the background. Only this time you think to yourself something more positive. So for example, like, I've handled this situation before. I'm capable of finding another job if I fail. So really encouraging that positive self-talk in that last step.
And it sounds like you're pre-framing that positive self-talk. So when it really happens, you already know what to fall back onto.
Yes. And in a way, it's like visualizing something positive. The way I think of it is like someone who's trying to lose weight. It may be helpful for them to visualize themselves at their target weight. And that'll help them. Yeah, that'll help them manifest the weight loss.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it's fascinating to me because here we're not really changing the contents of your experience, right? So the contents of your experience when you got fired remain the same, but now you feel differently about it because you've sort of changed the structure of perception that you used to apply to it. And you've achieved, in my opinion, a sort of, let's say, metacognitive shift here, you know, where you're suddenly seeing and experiencing the event and the memory differently to how it was before.
Well, yes, most definitely. And that's where the behavior science aspect comes in, is with reframing. Like another example that I like to give is, I was telling Yoast that I have this irrational idea in my head that I feel fat sometimes and I'm not happy with my self-image. So a brief exercise that he walked me through was, imagine these two thoughts in front of you. So imagine the thought of I'm fat and then something that is unlikely. So for example, he's told me to visualize like my toe has the ability to start a fire, like my my small toe has the ability to start a fire.
And yeah,
take those two thoughts. So what that basically is comparing the idea of me being fat to something that is irrational. And then mentally think of like a slingshot of those thoughts, like trading places in that visual field. In person, it's a little more effective because you actually move your body and then like you put that thought onto a slingshot, like a mental slingshot, you pull it back and then you let go and that thought trades places with that irrational thought.
I see. Well, that's quite fascinating. And I mean, a lot of this stuff, if we study the science behind it, a lot of it is about memory reconsolidation, right? Because just like with your case of when you lost your job, you've managed to change the feeling and the emotion associated with that memory. And I think that that can be really powerful for people because, I mean, you tell me how did having this bad memory affect you in the past, and what change happened with you, and what change did you notice in your life after you managed to reframe it and get over it, basically?
I think the defining feature was I no longer felt fear. I no longer felt inadequate. I had this newfound strength to say to myself, I'm resilient. I can persevere. I can overcome anything.
Nice.
And it was amazing how immediately my performance at work, it was no longer hindered by all this negative self-talk.
Wow, nice.
I no longer think, oh, what if I fail? What if I make a mistake? When you're free from that idea of making mistakes and thinking of all the things that could go wrong, you're more free to create new decisions and act proactively.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating because personally, and this is my personal opinion, I think that anxiety and fear are very important issues that are not often addressed when it comes to work and business. And I think that nowadays, when we have a lot of technology available and we have the resources that we need, the thing that's holding us back really are our feelings and our negative feelings specifically, because they don't let us access our full potential and use all the resources that we have available to ourselves. So is the ABC NLP framework effective for when it comes to dealing with anxiety, replacing fears, conquering fears? How would it work in those cases usually?
Yes, so the way this would work in terms of dispelling fear and anxiety and self-improvement would be if, like, let's say, for example, if I'm working with a type 5 analyst, and one of the characteristics of a type 5 is they like to be left alone. They value their autonomy. And one of the key words I wanted to bring up was probability. Mm-hmm. So something that Joost van der Ley stresses is being open to the possibility of ideas. So in this situation, if I'm dealing with a type 5 analyst and they want to be left alone, the idea here is to not take it personally when they want to be alone. Mm-hmm. So instead of interpreting it as, oh, they're ignoring me, they don't like me, being open to the probability, the possibility that it's their brain type. They want to be left alone. They're not upset with me. It's who they are.
That's how they work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I see. That's really powerful. I mean, that has applications that I can see outside of work as well. I mean, in personal relationships everywhere, pretty much problems like that always come up. And it's fascinating how understanding other people better gets us to engage with each other a lot more productively across the board. One thing that I wanted to ask you, so obviously I gather from everything that you've said so far that ABC NLP is really, really powerful. One thing that has me curious is what are the main differences between ABC NLP and the old form of NLP that was originally taught by John Grinder and Richard Bandler?
So some of the main differences are, like, we use that ABC portion, antecedent behavior consequences. Mm-hmm. That's something that I have not seen in the more traditional NLP books. Mm-hmm. And the ABC portion, that's the behavior science part that is being researched at the University of Amsterdam, where they integrate the antecedent behavior consequences with the cybernetic Big Five theory.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So, I mean, this research on the behavioral side, how does this change the way NLP is being applied, the ABC stuff?
So the way that changes is when we apply it to the neurogram, the 9 different brain types, mm-hmm. you can dive a bit deeper into someone's personality. So, and then another thing that I'll add here is that in the appendix of 9 Doors of Perception, we go into greater depth with the cybernetic Big Five theory and how those 5 ideas tie in with, like, the wings and the stress and relaxation points of each type. So, for example, with the type 8, the boss, or when relaxed, will move to a type 2, and then under stress, will display the characteristics of the type 5 analyst. And then also taking into consideration the wings, like 7 or 9, and how that could play out for when interacting with each of the 9 types. And the thing I would like to add or reiterate here is that on each of those 9 types, each of those types have access to their 2 wings and their stress and relaxation points. Mm-hmm. So that is something that's delved into deeper in the appendix of 9 Doors of Perception.
Awesome. So, I mean, if I can summarize this, and please correct me if I'm wrong, the ABC part, to me, it sounds like it really helps to apply the NLP to the different personality types. Would you say that that's a correct understanding?
So we apply the ABC portion to each of the 9 types. Mm-hmm. So, like, as I said earlier, with, for example, the type 5 analyst, some of the antecedent would be where they want to be left alone. They desire their autonomy and freedom of choice. So I know Yost told a story about how he had a team of type 5 analysts. So what he said to them was, I don't care when or how you get this work done. I just want it done mm-hmm. by such and such date. So he gave them the freedom to decide what hours they worked. And like he essentially removed any limitations from their work so that they could work more effectively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fascinating. And I mean, I really love how this is, how you're learning basically how to influence different personality types, and we're not trying to pigeonhole everything in the same approach to influence, which is basically pretty much what all the materials so far have been saying. You know, everybody had their own theory of influence, and then it was about taking everybody, regardless of their personality, through the same framework. So I love how this is going into the depth of it, and it's looking at how it can influence people based on their brain type. So I think it makes it really powerful. I wanted to ask you a question now. I know that in traditional NLP, one of the core principles, so to speak, is that the map is not the territory. I was wondering what role this plays in ABC NLP and how you actually use it in practice.
Oh, yeah. So basically, my take on that idea of the map is not the territory mm-hmm. is that even though someone may be one brain type, so for example, if Ben is a type 7 hedonist, he still has access to all the other different types. So he can still embody the traits of a type 4 romantic.
I see.
Like sometimes he might even embody the traits of a type 3 successful mm-hmm. worker. So this is more of a guide of how to gauge people. And we don't want to make it seem like people can only be one type, especially since there's like access to wings and stress and relaxation points. So even though someone will be one type, they can still borrow the traits from these other types and embody those personality traits as well.
Mm-hmm. Is there a specific activity that people can do to help them embody different personality types, or how can they go about accessing those personality types basically?
Oh, that's a great question. So where I want to break that apart is I think of it in terms of the like the deadly sin versus the main virtue of each type. So mm-hmm. the way Yost plays that out is, like, for example, with the type 8, the boss, their deadly sin is lust.
Mm-hmm.
If you take that into account, the stress points and like the deadly sin of each type, then you can more effectively think about where you might embody some of these traits. Like the type 6, their main virtue is courage and being brave. Mm-hmm. So in a way, if you look at these 9 different types and look at some of their strengths and some of their weaknesses, you can think, oh, I might embody the type 2 helper when I'm in a group setting because I want to give the love and attention to my team.
Mm-hmm.
Or
I see, yeah.
Yeah, or like in different situations, like if I'm giving a presentation at work, I might think about how a type 3 successful worker would handle it. Like,
mm-hmm.
like have success on the minds and be more work-oriented. Like I personally like the type 5 analyst the most out of the 9 types. Or like I admire those traits the most of being analytical, being logical, gathering all the facts to come to a decision. And it's that kind of personality that I try to have at work when I'm wanting to be my best.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I have a question now, which is a bit about the future of this, because I think that the future of influence is definitely personality-based influence. And one big development in this field at the moment is AI technology that's used online on the internet to decipher people's personality based on their posts on social media, based on the contents they share, based on their actions online. What sort of role do you see AI technology playing into the future? Do you think that it's going to increase the demand for personality-based influence? Do you think that for the first time in history, perhaps this is going to become crucial in order to stand out and actually influence people?
Yes, definitely. And especially with how something like advertising is changing so much, and how, you know, when you're looking at your phone and scrolling through Twitter and you see a personalized ad of something that you may have recently been talking about or even thinking about, and suddenly you see an ad for something that seems catered to you. Like the application that I could see this going in is like for ad agencies. If someone has a client that they're trying to make ads for, so for example, if they have, if they're trying to make ads for a large software drink company and they want to cater an ad to a type one perfectionist, they may say something like, yeah, this drink is best, is best on its own. The original is always best. Or for the type two, saying something like, oh, this drink will help you be, will help you be the best hostess or best host at your next party. Or with the type seven, like, oh, this product is going to help you become the life of the party. So catering some of those ads to these nine different brain types.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. So, I mean, I run an agency myself, an ad agency. The thing here that's really fascinating that I think will have a big impact on the future is actually personalizing ads based on personality types. So the technology is not yet quite there, but I can see in the not so distant future, 5 years, maybe 10 years from now, that platforms like Facebook and Google, they're already profiling people and building a profile for each person that uses them. But I mean, I think that this is going to expand to the point that you're going to be, as an advertiser, allowed to target people based on their personality. And I think that that's going to be a game changer for sure in the advertising industry. Do you think that, my next question now is, how do you think that ABC NLP is going to come in when it comes to helping somebody take advantage of these changes in the future?
I'm glad you brought that up, because in the Nine Doors of Perception, something we mention is language patterns to look out for. So for example, with the type one perfectionist, they often say we must or we have to do something. So I can imagine in the future, using that, identifying the language patterns of each of the types and using that with the ABC and getting an ad or a product or service catered to that sort of mindset.
That's definitely the future, if you ask me. I mean, so far, really what's been holding us back from doing this is simply that the technology wasn't there. But I think that the technology now is catching up to it. So it simply makes sense that those areas, which we haven't yet developed so much, actually get developed. And I think that Nine Doors of Perception is the first step that I've seen towards that direction. So that's absolutely awesome. So, I mean, massive congrats for taking this project on from the very beginning.
Thank you.
Yeah, I wanted to now ask you a bit about, because we discussed about the technology, how it can be used, who it can benefit, and how it can benefit them. I was wondering if you can tell us a bit more about the other people who are involved in the Nine Doors of Perception project, and basically what sort of expertise and input they are bringing into the project to make it such a success.
So I would love to give a shout out to Joost Vanderlei, the VU Amsterdam teacher and NLP certified instructor, Benjamin Garth, the Magic Castle award-winning magician, and then all the co-authors, Becky Gonzalez, Heath Davis, Eon Matescu, and thanks to you, Tutor. And also thanks to Trace Lepid-Bogda, who also wrote a piece for this book.
It's my pleasure. So thank you for all of that, Nora-Lisa. Yeah, this is really fascinating. So, I mean, I'm curious, how did you first meet Joost?
I met him through Benjamin Garth.
Oh, nice, nice. Because it sounds like the technology that he has given birth to really fits perfectly to this personality-based influence. And I mean, this was the thing that was missing for a lot of us who are working in the advertising industry, and obviously everybody else who needs to effectively communicate with themselves and with other people.
Oh, yes, definitely. And to elaborate on my answer of meeting Yoast, I was originally writing a book called Enneagram in Love.
Mm-hmm.
So that book, it was written and finished. However, it's now part of the appendix of Nine Doors of Perception.
Mm-hmm.
And what that is it walks you through each of the nine brain types and how they would interact in a relationship with the other types. So there's each type, like type one with a type two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, and so on.
Mm-hmm. I imagine that there must be some types which don't get along very well.
Well, there's some that in the appendix, I frame it as some challenges you may face or
mm-hmm.
strengths and weaknesses. I do my best to use positive language.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what sort of resources would you recommend to people who want to learn more about this? I mean, the Nine Doors of Perception book. Are there any other resources that you would recommend? And if so, I'm more than happy that we put links for them in the show notes so that people can actually access them and get started with them.
Yes, thank you for asking. So the number one resource that I would like to recommend today is Yoast Vanderlei's Increase Your Influence program. And there is an online class that he is starting that starts on September 21st. And I was even going to say, if your employer offers to reimburse you for taking his class, I will help you write the form myself. So that I would like to throw that out there to anyone listening.
That's an awesome offer.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, I mean, I'm sure that our listeners are going to love that. Can you tell us a bit more about the program? So what can they actually expect out of Increase Your Influence? How does it work? Will they be required to attend anything? Do they do it online? If you can give a bit more detail, because I'm sure that our listeners are going to be interested in that.
Yes, thank you so much for asking. So there are two different ways to take this class. There's the online class that starts on September 21st, and that online portion, that is going to consist of 7 days that are spread over 7 months, so that mm-hmm. that gives you time to ingest the material. And that focuses on the organizational behavior management protocol. And on that website, the influence.amsterdam
mm-hmm.
link, it lays out each day. So, for example, on day one, Yoast is going to go over the ABC model and the cybernetic Big Five theory.
Mm-hmm.
And then on day two, he'll go into a deeper dive in the cybernetic Big Five and enacting a measurement plan to use that OBM protocol in your everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
All 7 days are laid out in that web link.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you mentioned there are two versions. So one is the online one. So is there a one that you attend in person, or how does that work?
Yes. And then there's the one that is live in Amsterdam that takes place on November 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th, and on December 13th. And there's a few more days that are tailed in there, January 21st, February 21st, March 21st. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm really curious. So for this online one, you mentioned that it's going to be 7 days spread across 7 months. When you say a day,
uh-huh.
is that a full day, 8 hours? What sort of thing can people expect?
So that is from 10 a.m. till 5 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So it's like a full day. That's great.
Yes.
All right. So, I mean, if you had to select a bunch of people, who would you most recommend this program to, and what can they expect when they come out of it?
I would say this is recommended for absolutely anyone. This is something that anyone can learn from, especially when it's so applicable to not only your work performance, but everyday life. And what to get out of this, what to expect is increased communication and increasing your influence on others.
Mm-hmm. So that's awesome. So, I mean, can people expect that after going through this program and learning, they can, for example, get promoted more easily? They can, maybe if they're in sales or maybe if they're a director, they can land more clients. What sort of expectations should they have going through it?
Yes, this is a great class for increasing sales influence and getting more clients, especially since Yoast will be going over the language patterns, using that ABC NLP framework to get to know people better and to being able to effectively communicate.
Right. So that sounds great. So, I mean, this is the first resource that you mentioned, but you also mentioned that there are a few others. So, I mean, what else would you recommend?
Another thing I wanted to recommend is David Deutsch's Clubhouse. That was something that Ben and I were utilizing to get advice about sales pages, even getting advice about emails or advice about how to write something that is more effective, that is going to get people to want to read it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that link to his Clubhouse.
Awesome. So, I mean, can you walk me a bit through how the Clubhouse thing works? What exactly is it? I simply don't know. So that's why I'm asking you.
David's Clubhouse meets twice a month. It's run by David Deutsch and his team. And what you do is you submit a piece of work. So, for example, if I want advice about my recent sales page, I will give that page to David Deutsch, and he will, during this Clubhouse session, he will look at it and talk about, oh, does this grab people's attention? Is this going to make an effective sale or not?
Wow, that sounds really powerful. And I mean, I know about David and I know about the team at Marketing Rebel. So I mean, getting some time with them to actually review your copy sounds really powerful. I gather that you are taking part in these meetings. So can you tell some people how it goes and what they can expect out of it? Are there a lot of people in there? Do you get a lot of one-on-one time? How exactly does that work?
Oh, yeah. The thing that I love most about it is you do get that one-on-one time with David Deutsch and Stan Dahl. And then there's also the other members in this. So this last session that I was in, there were about 20 people. And the thing I enjoy about it is you get lots of different feedback. So the other members can chime in and say, oh, I like this, or
I don't like it.
It gives you a chance to get some really honest feedback about your
life. So it's like a focus group.
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome. And I mean, how much does David charge for this?
David Deutsch charges $97 a month for his Clubhouse.
Wow. That's,
yeah,
that's really fantastic value.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, you're getting some copywriting pros to advise you on your copy for just $97 a month. That sounds absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow. That's great then. So, I mean, I'm sure that our listeners are going to love those two resources. And of course, I presume that we can put a link down in the resources for them to the book, right? So that they can actually get the book.
Yes, definitely. And what we're going to do is we're going to sell the ebook for $1. And with that, what that dollar gets you is a digital copy of Nine Doors of Perception and that first day of class, September 21st, with Yoast van der Lee.
Wow, nice. Nice. This sounds fantastic. This class on September 21st is going to be included in the $1.
Yes.
Wow, that's tremendous value. And I suppose that this offer is only going to be up until September 21st, right?
Correct.
Okay, so they will have to sign up and get it before then.
Yes.
Okay, that's cool. Well, I'm sure that we're going to have a ton of listeners who are going to be interested in this and joining up. Is there anything that they can do if they want to continue with the program after September 21st?
If they want to continue with the program after September 21st, you would sign up on that Increase Your Influence program link.
I see.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Awesome then. So then thank you very much, Nora Lisa, for your time today and for introducing our listeners to Nine Doors of Perception. Are there any last words that you would have for our listeners now at the very end?
No, this has been really great. I am grateful for your time.
Thank you then very much, Nora Lisa. Glad to have you. And for our listeners, stay tuned for the next episode. And until next time, keep growing your business and providing massive value to the world. Remember, you are the reason why we're all growing richer, our freedoms are expanding, and we're all living in greater prosperity.